This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that exists to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
It was the second semester of my sophomore year at KU, and I lived in a house, if you're familiar with Lawrence, I lived in a house at around 20th and Ohio Street, and it was pretty much a dump. It had three bedrooms, two small bedrooms, and one large bedroom, and my friend Paul and I shared the large room, and one night is around 3 a.m., and we both woke up because we heard this really loud, like, banging noise and screaming. And I remember saying, "Paul, did you hear that?" "Yeah." "What is it?" "I don't know." And I don't know if you've ever experienced, you know, being, you know, you're woken up in the middle of the night out of a really deep sleep. And in that daze, you draw some conclusions that are really wrong, like really bad. Well, that was one of those nights. We heard this loud banging noises and again, this unintelligible screams, and literally, like in an instant, fear just completely gripped our hearts and minds. And we were convinced that a deranged lunatic was trying to get into our house and was going to do us harm. Paul says, "Call the police." And I just reach over and grab the phone. And this is when you actually have to, like, dial. And I said, "I think a crazy person is trying to get into our house." And so we stayed in our beds. And then literally, like, within a minute, we see these big spotlights in the backyard. And we hear this voice, "Put your hands in the air." And we're like, "Oh my gosh." You know, so we're like, "Okay, well, they've got this guy, so we're safe." So we run outside, and they have our roommate, Martin, in custody. He was a law student, and he had gone to the law library. He was going to do an all-nighter, but he fell asleep and then kind of woke up and thought, "Oh, I'm just going to go back home and go to sleep." But he was locked out, and he was just banging on the side of the house trying to get our attention. So, "Sorry, dude, man, you got to be more clear. I mean, come on." Our fear ended up being totally unfounded. Our imaginations just kind of, in an instant, went wild, and the danger was really not there. And as I was thinking about this sermon, if only that was true of all the things that make us fearful. If only they just turned out to be, you know, nothing. But we know that there are many things in this life that legitimately make us afraid. The same is true for David. I mean, David's life, if you read the story of David's life, he just had people who wanted to kill him all the time. You know, they literally wanted to kill him. Goliath, Saul and his army, foreign armies, even his own son rises up against him and wants to take him out. So David was always surrounded, he says, by enemies. And I think, you know, we're not ancient kings who are going to battle and having invaders come and that kind of thing. But we all have things that very legitimately make us anxious and fearful. And it's not hard to think of what these kind of things are. I mean, the loss of a job, you know, watching a loved one make bad decisions really can cause fear and anxiety in us. A difficult diagnosis. I mean, we could just go on and on about the kinds of things that make us afraid. David calls it the day of trouble. And the day of trouble is real. And it comes to all of us. We know this. Jesus says it plainly. In this world, you will have trouble. In John 16. To be human is to fear. We cannot escape fearful situations as long as we live. And so the issue that we're talking about today is not about, we're not trying to eliminate fearful situations. We wouldn't even want to do that because oftentimes fear protects us from danger. But what we do want to eliminate, if possible, is that kind of debilitating fear that can overwhelm us and take away our joy. You know, somehow, even though his life was constantly in danger, David was not paralyzed. He wasn't crippled by these fearful situations. He was confident. He said he had his head up. You know, this was not just some way David had of coping, or it wasn't an escape. Whatever it is that's going on with David is enabling him to triumph over his fears. And so that leads us really to our first question for this morning that we want to take a look at and try to answer. Why was David able to overcome his fear? What's going on with him that enables him to be surrounded by enemies and yet he's not afraid? Why was he confident even though people were after his life? Well, if you read the psalm, you know, the language really speaks to this kind of throughout. But verse 8, I think, is key. He says, "My heart says of you, seek his face. Your face, Lord, I will seek." So let's think about this for a second. What does this mean? This is language that is expressing a desire. It's expressing a desire not just for God in some sort of abstract or theological sense. Rather, what David is conveying here is a yearning to have an experience of God's personal presence. He wants an experience of God's personal presence. You know, the Hebrew word that is translated face is the same word that's translated presence. So if you read in the Old Testament, you know, they came into the presence of the king. They came into God's presence. It's the same word that's translated face, panim. Because there's no abstract Hebrew word for this idea of being in someone's presence. It's just face. To be in someone's presence is to be in their face. And the face is where you go to talk with someone. It communicates personal intimacy and vulnerability. So the face of God is not just his presence in some sort of general or abstract way. It's an experience of God's personal presence. And this is what David, what he had. He lived, for the most part, with a personal awareness of God's presence in his life. God was with him. And again, not in some general or abstract way, but in a personal, experiential way. And here's how I know. Look at verse 4. Verse 4 is a key here. It says, "One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in the temple." Typically, when people describe being in the presence of the Lord, they use words like glory or holy or majesty, which are all great descriptors, right? But when David is in the presence of the Lord, he describes him as beautiful. Beautiful. To gaze on the beauty of the Lord. When David is in the presence of the Lord, He perceives him as beautiful. And that means the Lord's presence is a pleasurable experience. The Lord is pleasing to David's senses. He derives a feeling of satisfaction being in his presence. And let me emphatically say to you that you may perceive the Lord, perceive of the Lord a lot of things. You know, if his presence to you is simply a mere kind of theological abstraction, if you think of God as just, he's just this God who's out there somewhere, and he is kind of mystically present everywhere in all the world, which includes you. If that's kind of your understanding of God and how he is present to you, then you may ascribe to him a lot of different, you know, words, but one of them will never be beautiful. If he's just this thing out there that is somehow kind of present to you, he will never be beautiful. You would never describe him in that way. Only people who see the Lord's face, who have a personal experience of God's presence, only those people will see the beauty of the Lord, will derive a sense of personal pleasure and satisfaction from that encounter. And so that's the answer to the question. The Lord was personally present to David. There was a personal intimacy and vulnerability between them. And that's why David was confident that the Lord was not only with him, but God was for him and loved him. And confident in God's presence and his salvation, David had his head up. He was not afraid, even though he was surrounded by his enemies. And so if we want to be able to say with David, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Then we need to have the experience of God's personal presence. We need to see his face. And that leads us to our second question, which is our final question. Well, how do we experience that? Like, how does that happen? Because if you assume it doesn't just happen automatically, you'd be right. Well, I think we need two things. We need two things if we really want to experience God's personal presence. First, I think we need to be moved by God's grace. We need to be moved by God's grace. You know, we can't just conjure up out of our own strength an experience with God. It just doesn't work that way. It requires grace. It requires God's willingness to be known by us. I mean, that was definitely true with David. As an Israelite, David knew that God had chosen them. You know, they had chosen them, and he had revealed himself to them. He also knew that God had delivered them from their slavery in Egypt. In David's personal life, he knew the same. He knew that even though he was the youngest of Jesse's sons, that God had chosen him and anointed him to be king. He knew the Lord's deliverance. You know, when he faced Goliath, the Lord delivered him. The Lord delivered him from these foreign invaders. The Lord's grace moved David, and David lived with a profound sense of gratitude for God and what God had done for him. And in a similar way, we need to experience the grace of God. You know, God has revealed himself, and he has chosen and delivered us through his son Jesus. In Jesus, God has shown us his love, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And that's the good news. And if we want to experience God's personal presence so we can have a life that is not plagued by fear, then that good news of Jesus and what he has done for us, let me tell you, it has to move you. It has to move you in your heart. And gratitude has to kind of well up in you for what he has done for you. And if it doesn't, if that news does not do something in you and stir you, then you need to ask some different questions. If we want to experience the personal presence of God, the face of God that will deliver us from our fears, then we need to be moved by his grace, what he has done for us, which leads us to the second thing we've got to do. Being moved by his grace, we seek him. We seek after him. We need his grace to be sure, but as a response to his grace, we must seek after him. Listen to the language here. This is all from the psalm. It's all through the psalm. This is what David is expressing. I ask from the Lord. I seek. He wants to gaze on the beauty of the Lord, to seek him in his temple. I will sacrifice with shouts of joy. I will sing and make music to the Lord. Your face, Lord, I will seek. Teach me your way, Lord. Lead me in a straight path. I mean, what should be clear is that David wanted to know God. He wanted to know God in a personal way. God was not somehow just like forcing himself upon David, like, you know, well, you just have to kind of deal with my presence. No. David wanted God's presence. And so he pursued him passionately. And the same is true for us. If we want to experience God's personal presence, then we have to be willing to pursue him with passion, like David did. Yes, we need God's grace. It must be something that God does both for us and in us. But God's grace must be met by our well-directed effort to seek him and to worship him and to be taught and led by him. Now, this is why the great Christian author Dallas Willard, this is why he coined the phrase, grace is not opposed to effort. Grace is opposed to earning. And there's a difference. This is why Paul tells us to work out our salvation. And Peter tells us to grow in grace. If we want to live in the presence of God, then we have to seek him. We have to strive after him. You know, Jesus says that the greatest commandment is to love God, but that's not some sort of passive activity, nor is it just simply a mental activity. We're to love God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind, with all our strength. It's our entire being. And so we have to ask ourselves and be honest. Is that something we want to do? Is that something that we're willing to do? Are we willing to make time in our life for God? Are we willing to seek Him? Are we willing to worship Him? Are we willing to be taught and led by Him? There's a good question for self-reflection. Am I really willing to not only know what God's ways are, but to do them? Which is not yes until there's something I don't want to do. It is not yes as long as it doesn't mess with my personal life or my sex life or my money or whatever it is. Are we willing to not only know God's ways, but to do them? The bottom line is there has to be a want to in you and me. And David definitely had that. He had that drive, that passion for God. And we have to have it too. And if we don't, and let's just be real, let's be honest, there are times that all of us don't have it. That it wavers, that we don't really have the desire, the drive that we need to know God. And when that happens, the solution is not to simply try harder. Like, I'm just going to try harder and muster up more desire. No, that will not work. That will fail you every time. If we don't have the passion that we need to desire God and to strive after Him, then we need to go back to the beginning and focus on God and His grace and what He has done for us. If we don't have that desire, that drive, that passion, then we need to go back and contemplate again and again and again the amazing love that God has shown us in Jesus Christ. We need to see Jesus lifted up on the cross and know that He did that for you and for me. He loves us that much. He loves us with everything. And that's why we're called to love Him with everything in return. We can know the personal presence of God. We can see His face and live in confidence, have our heads lifted up, even in the midst, of being surrounded by enemies. David's experience can be our experience. We can say along with him, though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. Here's what I want you to do. You see, we have this way, week after week after week after week, year after year after year after year, of being reminded and thinking deeply about what God has done for us in Jesus. And so when you come to the table in a few minutes, as you take that bread and wine, I want you to ask God to give you an even greater, deeper appreciation for all that He has done for you in Jesus. And let that reality sink deep into your heart and mind. And in that place of thanksgiving and gratitude, ask the Lord, help me. My desire, my passion is waning. I don't have the strength to pursue you the way I'd like to. Ask him to give you the passion for his presence and a yearning for all of his ways. And then when you ask him, commit yourself. Commit yourself to him, to seek him, to seek him with all of your heart. And he promises that if we seek him, we'll find him. And then your heart will not fear. You will live in confidence, and you will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living.